If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
Hey everybody, welcome back to the show, the Nerd Nest podcast. I forgot the name of the show at the beginning, as a good host does. We got Carrie, we got Rich, and we've got a lot of stuff to talk about. And I think we're going to start right off with the biggest news, that there is another handheld coming. And this one is very different. Rich, you put out a really good video about this, the MSI Claw. Terrible name,
right? It's so bad.
it's like you got the Steam Deck, you've got the Lenovo Legion Go, you've got the ROG Ally. Of those, it, like, they sound like something that was named by an adult, and the MSI Claw sounds like something that somebody went and they picked up their 7-year-old from school and they said, hey, we're going to build this new thing. What do you want to call it? And the kid's like, the Claw. it just sounds goofy. But, you know, you can name whatever, a rose by any other name, that kind of thing. You can name it whatever, and it's still going to be the same thing. Rich, tell us about what makes the MSI Claw, as we understand from the rumors, different.
Yeah, that's a good question. What makes it different, right? Because a lot of people, even with what does make it different, a lot of people are kind of feeling like this is very samey, very Me Too, not enough meat on the bones. But what is, and yes, one more preface, is that this is all leaks and not quite speculation at this point. It's just leaks. So some of this is subject to change. But the big difference is that this is using an Intel APU, the Core Ultra 7 155H, which is one of their brand new Meteor Lake APUs. Carrie, I suspect you know more than I do about it, but I did watch a few laptop reviews on this. And it seems like, so the big thing with Intel APUs is that they have been power hungry for forever, right? And AMD came in and made a big leap with their APUs in a way that they have not been power hungry, much more power efficient. And that's what's enabled Steam Deck to be the Steam Deck and operate so great at 12 watts. Intel is making leaps to catch up, and they made a big leap, it seems like, with the Meteor Lake, but it's still not at the level that the AMD APUs are at. But at the 28 watts that is listed, it does appear that the 155H has like a 10 to 15% graphical increase. I don't know, and I don't think there's enough information yet to know whether or not these chips will be in devices that will go above 28 watts. So I don't know, Carrie, if you've seen an answer to that, but the devices that are out there now seem to be locked at 28.
Well, from what I've seen, it wants more than 28 watts. I think also they're listed TDP wise that they can go up to like 100 and something.
I saw 155.
Yeah, which, truth be told, like, all of these chips technically can. Like, right, the Steam Deck can go up to 30 watts if you were to allowed to push all cores to max frequency. Not that it would really do much for you, but you can. And 28 watt is really when, 20-ish, 25 watt is really when, it's, based on the stuff that I've seen, is really when the 155H starts to get its legs.
Right.
Which is unfortunate, because it means that, you know, it's going to be a glorious portable gaming experience for all 20 minutes of it.
Right. Right. That's the thing. You've seen the render of the MSI Claw, and it looks to me like it's about the size of an ROG Ally. It looks to me a lot like the ROG Ally, right?
It does. Yeah. Like it even has like the same buttons, like the
exactly
their extra buttons and then their menu and view buttons from Xbox controllers. It's like they're in the same spot. They're the same size. It's
very similar looking. And the ROG Ally has a 40 watt hour battery. So even assuming it's running at 28 watts, literally you're already under an hour. So that's scary in terms of battery life. And then, but I do wonder, right, if we are able to go above, whether it's because it's docked or something like that, the Z1 Extreme and the 7840U have really diminishing returns after 25 watts, right? Is that tail much longer on the 155H, where if you can go over 28 watts, you don't have as diminishing returns, or maybe you don't see diminishing returns until you get to 40, 45 or something like that. That doesn't seem like something we know yet.
So I'm going to say it's not, I think. So here's the reason why. It's still 128 bit wide interface. So we can only feed so much bandwidth to that GPU, and that GPU isn't exceeding far beyond what it's already doing. It can probably scale up a bit more just pushing power into it, but because we're going to be bandwidth bound for it by and large, that we're really in both the 7840U, the Z1 Extreme, and also the 155H, we're seeing the upper bounds of what is possible on the GPU side. The only way that they're going to get around this is by doing more work inside of the same bandwidth scope, which can happen, but that's usually architecture changes. And not for nothing, but Intel just did their GPU architecture change, and that's where they are right now. So they're looking pretty good insofar as, if you think about just how much power you're putting into a 20 watt versus 28 watt, they're still exceeding what RDNA 3 is really just a double pump to RDNA 2, and it's not really getting any of those gains anywhere. It's like a very matrix multiplication type of look at things, right? Like if you're looking at just trying to pump stuff in so far as FP16 or FP8, but for FP32, it's not going to be very helpful. Likewise, so when you're looking at this, it's not really going to scale all that much more. So yeah, you can go up to 35 and 40 watt and you'll see diminishing returns the same way. So you will get more performance out of it versus 7840U, but now you're in this realm where at 40 watt TDP, you're looking at like 55 watt total system power. That's 40 minutes of battery life on a 40 watt hour battery. If it's a 50 watt hour battery, it's still like 50 minutes of battery life. That's stupid.
He said what we've all been thinking, right? Like it's something that I tried to avoid stating matter-of-factly in my video, but like that's the concern we all have, right? Like it doesn't feel like it's even going to reach an hour.
Yeah.
These companies are focusing on the wrong thing. They always seem to fall into this trap of bigger number, better. And it seems to me, and I'll get called a fanboy for this, but Valve is the only one that seems to be trying to focus on lower power usage because you're dealing with a battery bound device. When if you're building like a little box to put under your TV, then give me all those watts. I'm for it. But when you're dealing with something this size, the size of a handheld, all the power in the world doesn't really matter on a 7-inch screen. Like you can't see a lot of the details that you're actually getting, and you don't need to push those resolutions super high. So being more efficient is better. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe that Meteor Lake, doesn't it have more efficiency cores than the previous, Crystal Lake or whatever the hell it was called?
So there's Elder Lake and then Tiger Lake.
Elder Lake, thank you.
Oh, so it's Raptor Lake. So it's Tiger Lake, Elder Lake, Raptor Lake, Meteor Lake is where we are right now.
Crystal Lake, Jason Voorhees.
Yeah. since Elder Lake started, that's when they really went to their chiplet design. They call it tiles or islands or whatever they call it. How they're doing that is very, very inefficient insofar as what it does still need a significant amount of power just to get to like a place where it can operate. Meaning that yes, those efficiency cores do exist. And while they can be great, the end result is that 15 watt 155H is going to get beat up a bunch by Z1E and 7840U. And when you're looking at it like that, the Steam Deck is going to trounce it at lower TDPs. And when you look at it, people are going to go, well, what is the point of this? And I think ultimately it's like we're looking at this from the wrong angle. The angle that should be looked at is that Intel went to every OEM they could and said, look, we need this to be in a handheld because we need to be in a space. Here's a bunch of money or a bunch of discounts. Put it in a thing. Just make money. Who cares about whatever? Push power to it so that it's going to win numbers. And through a few different angles and money, it exists.
Okay, well, how much is that going to cost, Rich? What do you think?
Oh, geez. That's a tough one. I think they have to compete, right? Like, I don't see it. I think it has to be at 700 maximum, just like the ROG Ally, just like the Lenovo Legion Go. So I maybe this is naive, but I don't think they would be going down this road at all if they couldn't hit that $700 price point. It's just there's not enough there to hit that, to make people interested. If even at 700, it's going to be tough to get people interested, I think. Yeah. I think a lot of people that want a PC handheld have one at this point. And if they don't have a Steam Deck, they have an ROG Ally or a Lenovo Legion Go, and there's just not enough here to say, I'm going to spend my even if there is someone that's on the market, I'm going to spend my 700 on the Claw versus the Legion Go, just as an example.
It's called the Claw. It's called the Claw.
That's a fact.
That's going to help.
Yeah.
What were you going to say before I jumped in with price?
Yeah, so my pet theory is, so I hadn't really been following Meteor Lake all that well, but it sounds like they were promising a lot, right? So like that's where a lot of disappointment came in, because they did make a significant leap since the last generation, it seems like, but they were promising like Apple M1 silicon level leap. And they're gonna fall short of that. Everyone's gonna fall short of that. And so people are pretty disappointed. So my pet theory is that MSI bought into this idea of an Intel-based handheld back when Intel was overpromising. And now that it's underdelivered, it's way too late to like back out of this. They have to make this handheld, they have to release it, whether or not it's gonna work out.
Yeah, I that theory makes perfect sense to me. I hope that it's awesome. That's the thing. Same. I really hope that it's awesome. But I just like, it just looks like somebody grabbed a ROG Ally, painted it black, and put more power hungry chips in it.
Yeah.
And that's not the solution that you need for a handheld form factor. What were you going to say there, Kerry?
It's unfortunate because like, I don't care who comes out with anything, and I like Intel and AMD, so I'm not a fanboy for either one of them, but it's just the cold hard facts of where things are. Even if, and it is, when Intel said it was going to be 2x performance on their GPU, technically that's correct when viewed through a certain lens, meaning specific power. Once you go outside of any of that, like where they're looking, it doesn't. I mean, it kind of still exists because Alder Lake was kind of not great GPU-wise. The problem is that because I've been in this for as long as I have, we only had Intel chipsets for the GPU-N1, the GPU-N2, the GPU-N3, the GPU-N Max. That was all that existed. And they weren't terrible, but they weren't great. But they were also using Intel's older Gens-based GPU, which was a really low powered standardized GPU that just worked. It didn't really have any problems. Anything you threw at it would just run, just not great. And it really didn't take a lot of power. It was just kind of run of the mill 2012, 2014, whatever iGPU. The result of them going to a new GPU architecture has resulted in their drivers completely getting just, they had to like start from zero. And when God of War, for instance, when God of War came out on PC, I played it on a GPU-N3, and it had a texture bug. Basically, the game was like, oh, there's not enough VRAM. So everything just looked super muddy with no textures, and it was broken like that forever. As a result of like all of that stuff, the GPD community actually created a GitHub that is called the Intel GitHub whatever, so that people can submit bug reports to Intel, and Intel engineers are on this GitHub and looking at issues that people are submitting. So good on Intel for like actually working with the community here, because this is something that the GPU community arranged. But it goes to show you how bad things are, because you can just take a look at it and see all the problems that are in on Intel drivers. But more to the point, when Starfield came out, nothing, it didn't work at all. It loaded to a black screen. So you had, like, imagine buying a handheld that is not going to work day one, because all of the game developers that are working, they look at NVIDIA first and maybe AMD second, and Intel not at all. So this is a whole different race that Intel has to find themselves in, where game devs are going to now have to, when they're, you know, compatibility wise on their QA side, they have to test Intel. And do they want to do that when it's going to be like a fraction of a PC percentage? Like, so this is, there's not only is it going to have bad low TDP performance, it's high TDP is going to just make battery life terrible. The drivers are going to be bad. This is bad all over. It's, I'm not even like saying like maybe this will happen. I'm saying this is going to happen. So it's not a great situation that Intel finds himself in. And I just want to, the only thing I'd say these things for is not because like, yeah, Intel sucks. I'm just trying to set expectations. This is what it's going to be. Yeah. I know it's going to be like that because I have seen it. I can see it. So that's just where it's going to find itself.
I think it was a couple of years ago. Intel Arc GPUs came out, and like they were talking about how powerful they were, how great they were, but the drivers were a mess. And because of that, like a bunch of games just wouldn't run properly. And I mean, I'm assuming it's still going to be a Windows machine. You got to get everything set ahead of time. You know what I mean?
Right. So there is Mesa that does Intel drivers on Linux side. And for what it's worth, those are better than Windows side. But now you're talking about even a fraction of a percentage of people that are going to run Linux on it.
Yeah. Nobody's buying the claw and throwing Linux on it.
Yeah, there's like four of them. Like all 12 of those guys are going to do that and have an okay time. But yeah, I mean, you're finding yourself in a situation where, I don't know, there's a.
Some of that is like chicken and egg, right? Like you might have to suffer that to grow the base or whatever, so that you can fund more.
Right.
GP. Yeah.
So looking at it through this lens, right? Like knowing what we know and what Intel definitely knows, because they, all their engineers are like, say, hey guys, we're not selling something so hot here. How do you market this and how do you get this there? Price. Now, Intel still can flex price, which is something none of us know. Now, if the claw was $400, now all of a sudden that's something that's a little bit like, oh, well, it's super powerful at 28 watt, and maybe I'll just be plugged in, but who cares? And not every game's going to work, but who cares? I paid $400 for it.
Yeah.
There is still that avenue.
Would you buy one for $400, Rich?
I mean, would I buy one if I didn't have a channel? Is that the question you're asking?
We'll answer both questions, I guess. Would you buy one if you didn't have a channel? And the answer is no. And then would you buy one if you did, since you do have a channel? And the answer is
absolutely. Like, there's no question. Yeah, I would buy one at 700 just to review it. I'm interested. I would like to see for myself, like what that 10 to 15% difference is. But you know, in terms of what I play on a daily basis, it's still the Steam Deck OLED. That's just my preference, right? I've always been someone that really favors Steam input, right? So I like the trackpads. I like the gyro. I really favor Steam input. I love the idea of like console amenities, right? Like that to me has been a thing that Steam brought to PC back since Steam was a thing, right? Like it's bringing some of those console amenities to the PC space. So Steam Deck's just a good fit for me.
Power does not figure into that equation at all for you, right?
At all, right? Like most of the games I play are indie and mid spec games at the most. I have been playing more and more AAA games as of late, but it's not something that it's not my bread and butter. So yeah, power doesn't factor into it for me. If anything, I want that extended battery life.
I feel like most people who really care about power don't care nearly as much about a handheld PC. I feel like the people who really want power want to hook it up to their big ass screen. You know, you got a 32 inch ultra wide screen hooked up with your LED lights and your fans spinning in your PC and all that, all the things that come along with PC gaming. If you really care about power, I feel like that's where you want to play your games. And playing your games on something like this, when you're on a small screen and you got built-in speakers, I feel like that the power just isn't the reason that you go to these kinds of devices. I could be wrong. I'm sure that there are people out there that bought the, I don't know, was it the Aionio Kune that was like super, like it had really, really, it was huge. And I think it was pretty powerful, right? So
it just could go to higher wattage.
Yeah.
But right. That's what I mean.
The same AP. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So it could go to higher wattage. So that means it's going to perform. It'll be more performant if it's plugged in or whatever. I think that's appealing to a very, very small set of people, which is why you don't get that many options with this kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Kerry.
All right. So let me, this is along the same lines, but bear with me a second. I keep on bringing this up because it's something that I want for a while. A gaming phone. Why isn't a gaming phone? Why doesn't a gaming phone exist? Let me ask you guys that question first.
I'm going to answer that question because I need this to be ready to do things that are important. So I don't want to drain the battery on this. Mm-hmm. Then I can't use this to do things that actually matter. Not that gaming doesn't matter, but you get what I'm saying.
All right. So then
secondly, it's not comfortable. If this has, if I go and grab the backbone and I throw a controller thing on this, on the side, that's fine. But if I can't take that off, if I can't take that stuff off of the phone, it's not a comfortable thing to use. I can't easily put it in my pocket. So it just doesn't seem super appealing to me to have a phone that has all of that stuff. Now, if by gaming phone, Kerry, you mean like it's just more, it's built for gaming and you're going to use an external controller.
No, I mean, like literally like a gaming phone, like it has controls.
Like the N-Gage.
No, like the Xperia Play.
PSP Go. Yeah.
Like the PSP Go. Yeah. Something that you slide up and that. So imagine it was comfortable to use. Yeah, imagine it was comfortable to use, and imagine it had a bigger battery to compensate for your concerns.
Even not bigger battery, one thing I would take is removable battery, right? Like if I could exchange my battery, like I'm in the middle of playing, okay, I'm almost out of battery, time to swap out of my battery. If I could do that, that would be huge.
All right, so the reason why I bring this up is because the same arguments happen for a gaming phone that happens with these handhelds, and it's happened since time immemorial. Is whenever I say, oh, I wish there was a gaming phone, people just say, just get an external controller. And I say, no, you already have that. Why are you even commenting? Stop saying that. And then whenever the GPD Win 1 or the GPD Win 2 came out, they said, for that price, I could get a better laptop. And I say, well, you're not going to be playing in a handheld fashion on a laptop. But for some reason, this conversation always comes up. And then their next point to argue is, well, then I'll just get a Switch, which is $300. And that's the argument, is handhelds are super inexpensive because the Switch made a $300 price. Or if you're going to pay $650 or $700 for a thing, you can get a gaming laptop that's way better than that, which will have nothing for battery life and isn't actually a handheld. So I don't even know why that's even in there. But that's what happens, is like people, I don't know why, but whenever I bring up a gaming phone, they're just like, I'll just buy, get a backbone. And I'm like, I'm never gonna, if I don't carry my backbone with me, guess what? I don't have it. And now it's not a gaming phone. But if it's attached to the thing and I'm always having it with me, then I always have a gaming phone. And if I have a handheld, I don't need to have it. Like, I don't know why this happens, but this is like the core things that I've constantly noticed, is that it's really never about power. And it's like this weird, no one really understands.
Is that what your shirt is about?
Do you even handheld, bro? Yeah.
Plus, is that a PSP Go? Is that an Xperia Play on there?
This is a PSP Go. This is a piece of
that.
I would never use that as a device though, ever, because first off, I want my phone to be thin. I don't want it to be a thick boy. So if you're building two layers in where I slide the screen out of the way so that I've got these things, first off, that has to be thicker. Secondly, is not going to be thick, or it's still not going to be thick enough to give you a decent thumbstick. The thumbstick is going to be hot garbage. It's going to be terrible. It's going to be worse than the Nintendo Switch thumbsticks. Like, those are not great thumbsticks. You know what I mean?
Unless you make it thicker. If you make it
right, if you make it thicker, like it's this world of trade-offs. Yeah. I do agree that all of those people who are saying, well, I'll just do this or I'll just do that, I always say, like, those people are just goalpost movers. And no matter what you say to them, they're always just going to move the goalpost again. So I just don't even engage. But I just don't think that having a phone that you can get in that form factor, I don't think the form factor is good enough, if right. that makes sense.
Well, so here's my answer to what MSI has right now. Going down that way, which seemed like a digression, I'm going to bring it back. If Intel, with MSI, they bargain to make these chips very, very inexpensive for MSI, maybe Intel takes a loss on it, so that MSI could sell this for $400 or $500. And because it's going to be shown off running at 28 watt and 35 watt, it's going to be performing better than the Asus RG Ally, and it's going to be performing better than the Lenovo Legion Go on games that it works on. So you're going mm-hmm. to see something that's cheaper than them and hey, runs hey
guys,
better.
Guys, I'm sorry. I got it. I just got some bad news, and I've got to drop.
Okay, man.
Okay.
Hope everything's Rich. Okay.
Yeah.
Yep. Thank you.
Yep.
All right. Bye. Later. Bye.
Oh, man. Hopefully everything's all right.
Yeah, I hope so. All right. What were you saying?
So back to what I was saying, yeah, is if in this situation where you can get it, if MSI can get it cheap enough through the help of Intel subsidizing this cost significantly, and enough of reviews come out that show very, very narrow looks at this, where it's definitely going to be more performant than the Asus RG Ally and Lenovo Legion Go, now you're saying, oh, there's a $500 device that's 20% better than these devices, so it's X amount cheaper and better. I think that when this is going to cater to those crowds that are looking for cheap, very good. Like, they're not looking for any nuance. They just want, oh, this is better and better. And it's going to get those better number, bigger number, better people is, I think, where this can sell.
And I think those people are going to be very disappointed because what you just just defined as good, as more powerful. And I know that you're not making that, you're not saying that, but that's how a lot of people think about this. They think that more powerful is good, bigger number better, but what they don't realize is they are now going to be chained to an outlet, and there's nothing that they can really do about that. Sure, they can bring, you know, 1,000 little external batteries. I've got one in my backpack. They can do all of this stuff to try and extend their battery life as much as they possibly can. But at the end of the day, these companies need to focus more on efficiency. So, for instance, you know, talking about laptops, I'm doing this on my MacBook, right? And my MacBook, I used it all day yesterday editing videos. Unplugged, I picked it up this morning, it was at 60%. That's because the M series chips are stupidly efficient. And that's where, like, I feel like Apple is doing this thing where they're making it really, really efficient chips, which are still really powerful. And Intel and AMD seem to be going down this road of, we need to be able to push things as hard as we can, and they don't worry nearly as much about efficiency. What's the more efficient chips? Oh, my God, I can't. ARM. Yes, thank you. I cannot wait for ARM chips to get more proliferation. I don't know what word I'm looking for to be more accepted.
Yeah. So there's a bit that we can unpack there as well. So there is a bit of let me go through the reasoning here. Right. X86 can be as efficient as ARM at the moment. No one cares. And when I say no one cares is, I mean that we're still going through the iterations of selling whatever can come next. For instance, the next AMD chipset that's coming out is the 8840U. It is a rebranded 7840U. They are slapping a new sticker on last year's part and saying it's new. Now, they have all the parts to do the better versions of those now, but they're not. Because they want to sell that to you later on, because they need to be able to make sure that they can keep on selling yearly until they get to a point where they're going to be in a bad spot. So they are hedging their bets by not doing this, by effectively waiting to do all of this part, do all this stuff. And for what it's worth, they're not waiting. They're doing a bunch on x86 by removing stuff that's old legacy stuff that can be either emulated or isn't needed anymore. They're dumping all that stuff by the wayside. And when it comes down to it is like, when you look at ARM in specific ways, like on a phone or whatever, you're like, oh man, this is very performant and it's doing all this and I can run this and it's taking any little power. You have to remember that it's not going to scale very well at the top end. What Apple has done is they spent money. They spent money on making a bigger die. So it cost Apple more money to make those chips. They can be more efficient as a result, but that means that their margins are less, but also Apple charges more and Apple has customers that are going to pay that. Whereas on laptops and Windows, they don't have that luxury. Everyone in the Windows land is like, you know, based on volume sales instead of anything else. So this is where companies,
Well, they're based on volume sales, which is why a company like Lenovo or Asus or MSI can get in and do something like this. You know, and they, because they can hit those price points because they can buy so much. But then you look at like Aya Aya Neo or all of these other smaller companies that put out PC handhelds. Why are they so much more expensive? Because they can't buy at the same volume as these big companies do.
Yeah.
Sorry, I thought I wanted to add that in. Go ahead.
Yeah, no worries. So we're in that realm of things, right? It's not that making x86 more efficient to compete with ARM is outside the realm of possibility. It's just that they have been working on it, but there is a lot of things that they have to do, generally speaking, to make, and the chips that are there right now, technically, can be more efficient because we already have apps that do it by the community themselves. You look at the auto TDP apps. We have auto TDP apps that are doing something that we shouldn't be doing at all. We are saying, I want a frame rate of 60 FPS. Now I'm going to self-modulate the CPU and GPU clocks to just hit 60 FPS. Nothing does that. Nothing does that right now. Not NVIDIA, not AMD, not Intel. That's all on PC right now. They're like right now, if you have an NVIDIA laptop, and you play a game and you're going at 60 FPS, it'll happily burn through an extra 20 to 30 watts for no reason. And it's just the fact that that whole component of trying to optimize that isn't there. So there's parts there that you can make it more efficient, and Apple is doing the work to make it more efficient. And they're doing the parts where at the low end, like you said, like when you're doing video editing, it's bursting when it needs to and going to sleep when it doesn't. And you're finding this part of it has the best of both worlds, right? Like you can get performance when you need it and you get the power savings when you need that. And that's really where I think you're going to start finding these companies eventually getting to. And there's a turning point that has to happen. And I think we're getting closer and closer to that, because when you look at it, we're still, for whatever reason, looking at Windows and desktop PC through the lens of CPUs only. And I think that is starting to change. Once we start incorporating GPUs being inside of the power spectrum in a bigger component, because they never really were, because you always had a discrete GPU. You never had an integrated GPU. You know what I mean? Like this is,
Or the integrated GPU is a pile of garbage.
Exactly. So we're now finding like you look at all power schema stuff on Windows side, it's all tuning the CPU. CPU and nothing GPU wise. So there's a whole bunch of rework that needs to happen all over the place to fix this up better. But to the same point, you look at what the Steam Deck does at like 6 and 7 watt. Valve is doing the work to optimize all over the goddamn place. And what you're finding is something that is very performant and using very little power. And compared to what Apple is doing, if you were to look at frame rates alone, they're actually doing very, very well.
Yeah, I think that Valve understands that if you can only play your system for 40 minutes before you have to plug it in and charge it back to full, that's not a good experience.
Yeah.
And all these other companies, they seem to like, I almost feel like they're trying to prey on the ignorance of people who don't really understand that battery is an issue. And they say, all right, well, this is more powerful than the Steam Deck. Yes, it is more powerful than the Steam Deck. This is probably more powerful than the Legion Go, more powerful than the ROG Ally, more powerful than all of those things. But you pay for that power yeah. by only being able to play it for a very short period of time.
Yeah.
And speaking of power, it has 32 gigs of RAM.
Yep. Yeah.
What the hell? That is crazy to me. My laptop has 36.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think 32 is a good number.
That's
for
a lot.
Well, I mean, even for a gaming handheld, you say, well, what do you need for a gaming handheld? And the truth of the matter is, as we're starting to go into more modern games, VRAM size, we're just going to need 8 gigs. And if that's shared RAM, that means that system RAM wise, now you only have 24 gigs of RAM. Okay. So you have to remember that
that's fair.
Yeah, we're now going down. And now if Windows is going to be taking up 2 to 4 gigs of RAM, now we're down to 20 gigs of RAM. And anything else that you're running on there and other stuff that's just running, now we're getting close down to only having 10 gigs of free RAM at 32 gigs for a standard modern game. So as we approach things that, you know, going to more modern games and you just want to have better textures, you need that RAM. And if RAM isn't more expensive, then it's an easy way to make sure that you don't have weird performance issues. Yeah, so
that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. So I think we're going down a road where like 24 gigs of RAM or 32 gigs of RAM is going to be seen as the norm. But I think 32 gigs of RAM is probably the next step. And I would wager heavily that the Steam Deck 2 would have 32 gigs of RAM.
Okay. That's fair. It's so much more than right. what we already have out there. So it's surprising to me.
Right.
And like yeah. you talk about the textures again on a handheld, like you don't need to have the best that like the high res textures.
Right.
So you don't need as much RAM for that. But, you know, I think a lot of developers make games, and when they're making their games, they don't think so much about storage.
Yeah.
Not like Nintendo. Nintendo, they make their game, and the Breath of the Wild, I think, was 8 gigs or some stupidly low number like that. And you look at, you know, these games that come out on PC or on Xbox right. or on PlayStation, and they're 150, 200 gigs.
Yeah.
And a lot of that is like these HD textures and stuff that you don't necessarily need in order to play the game. So, for instance, Halo. Halo Infinite, which is wildly underrated, that game gives you the ability to decide which textures right. do I want to download when I go to play that game. So when I play Halo Infinite on my handhelds, it's the low res textures,
right.
and I cannot tell the difference on a screen that size.
Yeah, that's something that Microsoft did wisely. Only inside of the Xbox ecosystem is their smart delivery stuff. Like it would say, oh, you're on an Xbox, you know, Series S. You don't need all that. Here, just download this. Or if you're on an older Xbox One X, it'd say, well, you can't even leverage that, so you're only going to get this. So it'll download different things based on what it knows your system is capable of and optimize for that system. So smart delivery handles a lot of that, but only inside of the Xbox ecosystem. And
but on Steam, you can also pick.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, so on Steam and Steam Deck, there's a lot of things that they have to work around because they can just play any PC game. But the Steam Deck especially is going to find itself, because it can just play whatever, you're going to find itself coming into a place where you're downloading 150 gigabyte games and you need to, it's going to try to load it and you're going to be running out of RAM. Like Forza 5 on Steam Deck, it hurts it. It's running out of RAM. It doesn't have enough RAM. It's really, really straining under RAM. So, we're already at that point where 16 gigs is not enough. And for sure, 32 gigs is going to give it enough space where I think it's going to have enough leg room all over the place where it's going to run well enough.
Well, you bring up Steam, the Steam Deck being, you know, needing to be able to play pretty much any game out there. So I thought that this was a really interesting thing that Valve has broken yet another record of their own. This year, the games that were released on Steam, do you know this number off the top of your head, Carrie? Do you know how many it is? I'm just curious, because if you do, then don't guess. But if you don't, then I want to hear what you think.
This is the past 7 days, like a week or something?
No, last year. How many games were released last year?
I did see the headline. I know it's a big number, but I don't know the exact number. Yeah. But I remember reading it, yeah.
It's 14,531 games were released last year. And yeah. we're recording this on January 7th. 217 games have been released so far this year.
Yeah.
That's like the yeah. amount of games that are on Steam is it is staggering. And the runner up for last year, you know, who, you know, look at all the other platforms where you might play games. The runner up last year with was Nintendo Switch.
Yep.
The Nintendo Switch eShop came in second place with the number of games released last year. And that was, I think it, I don't have it in front of me because I closed the tab by accident. But that was, I think it was close to 3,000. 3,000 was in second place. First place was 14,000. Yep. And that is the secret sauce to why I don't think that Valve needs to really worry too much about what Nintendo does
right.
with the Switch 2. You know what I mean? Because let's say the Switch 2 comes out and it's backwards compatible. I know that you're very optimistic on that, Kerry. Fingers crossed that you are correct.
Because for all of us.
Yes, for all of us. But let's imagine that it is backwards compatible. Yes, there are a lot of games on there. I think that there might be 14,000 games in this Switch eShop library, but that's how many games were released on Steam just last year.
Yeah.
So you always have so many more options to play when you're playing on a PC. And that's not me saying that the Switch is bad, because I am a huge fan of the Switch and I'm going to continue playing on that. And I am going to buy the Switch 2 or the Super Switch when it comes out, or the Switch Pro. I also am going to do the same with my Xbox and the same with my PlayStation, because I play everything. But 14,000 games in 1 year is crazy. What's your reaction on that?
So there is there's a few different projects that I was looking at to try to swallow the ocean of games that was flooding in on Steam side, but it is too much, because now we're going to really, really depend on a lot of external sources to kind of find the diamond in the rough, so to speak. And there's a lot of different tools that Steam utilizes to try to like float those to the top. So you think of like Lethal Company was made by one dude, and that floated to the top. That guy has, you know, had a lot of success. So there are yeah. mechanisms there. Vampire Survivors, there's something that captures the zeitgeist and kind of blows up. But we also want to make sure that games that are better than average, not fantastic, can still get a spotlight shown on them. And that's really where I want to make sure nothing gets lost in the mix. It's not that we're just only looking at the shining bright light, is that we're looking at the stuff that is legitimately great, but just didn't enter that zeitgeist. And that's what worries me.
I think that's a tall order, because there's so much garbage. I mean, 14,000 games, probably 10,000 of those were hot garbage, like real bad games, like shovelware. Asset flips. Like, a lot of that is just bad games. And, you know, Steam is not the only place where these bad games exist. Nintendo Switch eShop has tons of them. I'm sure that PlayStation and Xbox have all of those same issues with just hot garbage. But, you know, you're looking for these games that they don't get into the zeitgeist, but they also are still good.
Yeah.
It's hard to find that kind of stuff. And do you use the Steam recommendation stuff? Like, do you really look at that? I never do. I just wait until I hear about something.
No. So I use other tools. There's like stuff like other Discords that I'm in that'll show like new Steam games that are coming in. So I get like an immediate alert that's coming in, and I'll kind of like just glance at them whenever I have the time. But it's at the point that it's, you know, multiple full-time jobs for people to sort through that. And I, you know, there's a part of me that would love to do that myself, because I would just love to, like, you know, do that, but there's no time. And I don't think there's any real money in there, because there's just a lot of people that, you know, don't value indie games as much as they should. Unless they're like Liza P, right? Like, it's like, wow, look at how awesome this game is. Or actually there's another game that's coming out by an indie developer, which I think we're going to start seeing a lot of. Do you remember that game that was Unreal Engine 5, but it was like you were a SWAT or a police officer and you were looking at body cam footage, like you were playing through the angle of body cam footage?
Yeah, people thought it was fake.
Yeah.
Like people thought it was filmed by actual people, but it was actually in-game footage.
Yeah, it just looked that good. And it just, it turns out that you just, like, if you do a good enough job on Unreal Engine 5 and do it through a body cam, like a FOV that is, like, really weird, that it kind of hides all of the not real stuff and makes it look even realer. Someone made a game where you're in a forest running away from a giant anaconda spider, and it's that, and it's, you know, a body cam footage, and you're running around, and it looks amazing. Like, it looks outrageously great. It looks real. And I feel like there's going to be, like, this wave of body cam first person realish games.
Kind of like the Vampire Survivors.
Yeah, like,
that we see.
Yeah, so I think that the effort to reach that type of fidelity has been lowered so much that and it's going to lean heavily on, like, horror type of stuff, because people like, you know what I mean? Like, there's just that genre that kind of sticks with stuff. So there's that type of thing. I think that we're going to see, like, these really weird offshoot things that are kind of conceptual ideas that are kind of cool, that are leveraging Unreal Engine 5 and maybe some asset flips, but used in a way that is compelling enough that the development time was fast, but it's still a compelling thing to look at, but maybe the price isn't right. So it's an interesting angle to try to solve. And I don't know if, like, a Steam Indie Pass might be necessary just to be able to, like, I can't buy all of these games and I would rather just play
exactly
them. Yeah, so
I think the closest thing you can get to that is Humble Bundle Choice, which like pretty good month this month.
This
has
month great.
Marvel Midnight Sun as well as a couple of other
I love you've played Theme Hospital. Have you ever played Theme Hospital in the 90s?
No, I've never played any of all of the games on Humble Choice this month are new to me. Oh. So I'm hyped for it because I don't have any of them.
All right. So I'm going to sell a lot of people on this. 2 Point Campus and 2 Point Hospital. When I played 2 Point Hospital, I was like, man, this feels exactly like Theme Hospital. And it turns out the original devs that worked on Theme Hospital make 2 Point Campus and 2 Point Hospital. So that's why it feels that way, because those guys did it. So if you wanted something that was like Theme Hospital, but like modern with different twists, it's a fan. Anything that those dudes make is, I would recommend. So I was super happy that it was there, because I've been waiting for a sale on it, and I was like, sick, let me just light myself up here and get the, because I bought the $99 year. They had a sale for Humble Choice.
Ooh.
Yeah, so it was like $100 for a whole year. And I was like, that's like $8 and change or whatever per month. And I was like, it'll come out to like $1 per game. Yeah, all right, whatever. Let me just go ahead and do that.
It is a ridiculous, like, Humble Choice is a ridiculously good deal. Full disclosure, I'm a Humble partner. I'm sure you are a Humble partner too, right, Carrie?
I do it. I just don't link it as much as I ought to.
Yeah, me either. I always forget. But they've got Midnight Suns on there, 2 Point Campus, Origami 2, Ocho, which I don't know anything about, Rogue Book, The Red Lantern, Hell Pie, and Twin Mirror. And like, it's not like Game Pass where you subscribe and then, you know, when you cancel your subscription, you can't play the games anymore. You get these games and you keep them.
Yeah.
And I have added Midnight Suns to my cart 1,000 times.
Right.
And then taken it back out. And so I am very hyped for this month. But yes, I would love to see Steam get into a subscription service.
Yeah.
And I know, like, we've had discussions about whether or not these are good for the industry or bad for the industry. I would love to see Valve get into a subscription where it's like Humble Choice, because otherwise you like, people only focus on the big games and the indie games get lost in the shuffle.
Yeah.
And that's one of the things about Humble Choice that's so good.
Yeah. I'd argue that Game Pass has highlighted a bunch of games that no one would have played before either. So as much as people might not like subscription services or whatever, especially when you think on, like, oh, there's 300 games that launched just this last week. If you had an indie pass and you didn't have to worry about buying it, like the thought of, like, man, do I even buy this? Do I even go through the refund process of, like, not wanting this game or whatever? You can't just keep on buying and refunding games all live long day.
Right.
And I would rather that I just spend like $15 a month or whatever on indie pass on Steam, and just be able to download something, and then that person get a portion of that money that I put in, right? Like, however that would need to get divvied out.
Based on how much time you spent playing their game, essentially.
Yeah, like, if I spent... Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, back when Stadia was a thing, they had a really, really good Stadia. I can't remember what the name of their program was, but it was a subscription service where you got access to new games every month. And those games were in your library as long as you were subscribed. And a lot of the devs who were part of that said that they made a lot of money from that subscription. Like, they were making more money from those subscriptions than they were from purchases. And like, that's the thing that a lot of, I understand it doesn't do well for like the big ones, yeah. But for indies,
yeah,
it's incredibly helpful because most indies, just nobody ever plays.
Sorry.
Somebody's at the door. Someone's at okay. The door. Someone's at the door. Do you have to go get it?
No, there's other people. So
okay.
So I'm of the mindset that there is just so many games coming out that there needs to be a mechanism for people to play these, and it can't just be on reviews alone. Not for nothing, but there is a, you know, it's normal human reaction whenever you hear someone recommend something. If you heard just some random person recommend something, you're not gonna care. You're like, oh, okay, that person. It's going to take a lot of people, like hundreds of people recommending the same game. You're like, oh, I should really start checking this game out. So there's this unknown number of noise that needs to happen before some people start to accept it as signal. And there's no one's going to go through so many reviews of like, oh, that game looks interesting, let me check reviews. I don't know if I want to spend $10 on this. And I think a lot more games get passed on rather than bought. And with something like an Indie Pass, there is no longer the question of even looking at reviews. You just go into it. Just go into it. Play it if you like it. If you don't, all right, no big deal. Uninstall it. There's nothing else to do here. Mm-hmm. Don't worry about refunding it. You've already, like, there needs to be something there because the current system that we have is not going to be, is not capable of taking in that ocean and having the mix pop up. Because I think, like, especially how Steam would do it is they could look at it through the metrics of how many people are playing for how long and where and what, that mm-hmm. they could float other stuff that is not just the zeitgeist popular seller. Is like, we're going to see the stuff that's just below the cream of the crop.
Well, I would like to, well, the thing is like, you know, we were talking about Humble Choice. That includes a lot of non-indie stuff.
Yeah.
A lot of the time, you know, I like this idea of Indie Pass where it's only indie games, only these smaller games made by small teams that don't have a budget for marketing.
Right.
Like that's the kind of stuff that I would love to see in your Indie Pass thing. Although I think they probably get sued for the pass name, because they don't have a choice. They have to try and protect copyright. And if they don't, then next thing you know, everybody's going to have Game Pass, PlayStation Game Pass.
Right.
Nintendo or whatever. So probably not the best choice of a name, even though I like the name a lot. But yes, highlight those indie games and give people a way to try them, because otherwise they're just going to get ignored unless they hit that critical point like Vampire Survivors did, or like what's the multiplayer one that you were talking about?
Lethal Company,
which I haven't played. I've heard really good things about.
Yeah,
so I don't know, subscriptions, yell at us in the comments if you don't like subscriptions. But I guess we can move on to our next news story. I was going to talk about Monster Hunter selling 23 million units for Monster Hunter World, and that is not even their best Monster Hunter game. Their best one, in my opinion, is Monster Hunter Rise. I'm super hyped for the next one, but I don't think that I want to spend too much time on that. Instead, I want to spend some time on, we always talk about things where people get things wrong. And we finally see a company doing something, in my opinion, that is, they did the right thing. And that is NCSoft, which, if you don't know, a few years ago, it seemed like they were going to take over the world when it came to online multiplayer games. And they had this game that came out back in 2004 called City of Heroes. And it was Really, oh, right. really fun. It was a massively multiplayer online role-playing game where you made a superhero. You got to pick your superheroes. It had ridiculous costume customization, so you could make your character look exactly like you wanted. In fact, people were making Spider-Man and Wolverine and Marvel suit them because it was just too easy. I believe if memory serves, they got sued by Marvel because of that stuff. But you could like make your own superhero, pick your own powers, and then go into this world and fight bad guys with your friends. And it was really, really cool. And it got a bunch of free updates. And then I think it was 2017 that the game shut down. But then in 2019, the source code was leaked. And this new fan-run Project Homecoming came out where you could basically play the game just like you could back in the day. And, you know, there was some legal back and forth, but what eventually just happened is NCSoft has now licensed that like City of Heroes to this Project Homecoming. So people can keep playing this game that they bought, keep playing this game that they love and enjoyed. And they basically, NCSoft didn't set out to release the source code, but once it was out there, they just said, well, we can make some money on this, or we can just keep suing. So let's make some money and license the game to them. That's just awesome, isn't it?
Yeah, we had this discussion prior before, didn't we?
Not about this, though. That we talked about the fact that too many times these games just vanish and we can never play them again. Yeah. But here's NCSoft doing the right thing.
Yeah, so I'm a big fan of this. I think that this is an avenue that they should all have been looking at from the get-go. Is like, hey, you know, we can't pay people to do this and keep this up because it's not profitable for us. However, if there is a enthusiastic bunch of people that are doing this out of the love of it and want to make some money, but we'll also get a small portion of it, but we're just going to get money from nothing, essentially. Like, no big deal. Right. You guys do that. It's going to be your niche, and it's just for people that really enjoyed it, and it's going to generate whatever it'll generate, but who cares? You guys have fun. We're going to essentially rubber stamp it, say that this is cool to do, and now you've solved a big problem of game preservation as well as legality, and it's a win-win for everybody. And I think that this is a no-brainer from all of our perspectives, right? But like, I don't know what the hang-up has always been. Like, well, if we allow this to happen, then when we need to make a new game, you know, will we be cannibalizing sales and this and that and the other? And maybe there's other considerations that I'm not thinking about or other people aren't thinking about. But it's like, I don't know. When you have a thing that it's only going to be a few thousand people strong, that
right.
It doesn't probably make any sense to even care about it, because the landscape of the gaming industry is such that other new games are going to cannibalize your stuff anyway. So why try to worry about cannibalization when, you know, it just didn't make any, especially at this point, 300 games just came out on Steam, right? Like there's just not enough time anywhere ever to cover how many games are out there. And so many of them are free to play right now that most people don't even have to pay for games to actually play anymore. So
right.
the real challenge is just time. So get it wherever you can. And I think that this has been a no-brainer forever, but it's a no-brainer more now than ever.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code Spotify for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Yeah, I agree with that. The next story that we were going to talk about is the idea that Boomer Shooter is now an official genre on Steam. I want to wait until Rich is here for that because he loves that genre so much. So we'll talk about that probably next week. Let's move on and talk about Prince of Persia. Are you hyped for that game, Kerry?
I am. I also saw this feature that you're talking about.
Oh, my God. This is so cool. Tell people about this feature while I put it on screen.
All right. So how I interpreted the feature is that you can take a snapshot of where you are, and it will basically show you what's going on the screen, which is immensely helpful for Metroidvanias because you're on that screen. And you're like, you can't reach that ledge. If you could only double jump to that ledge, it would be helpful. So you know that you need an item or something to get to that thing. But when you get that thing, you may not remember where the hell it was. So now you're just exploring all over the place to find that place. So with this system, you can take a snapshot of the area that you're in, and it'll mark it on your minimap when you're looking at your minimap, so that as you're getting new items, you go, oh, I got it. Where was that thing? And you can go, da-da-da-da-da-da. Oh, it's right there. And now you can make a beeline to it. So it's making Metroidvanias having that one part of Metroidvanias that it was always a sticking point. In terms of just traversal and over-exploration of parts just to find the thing that you needed, because sometimes Metroidvanias, especially their art style or art design, can be very samey looking, and you can miss the place that you were supposed to be. You go into like, mm-hmm. No, it's not here. Then you go and go somewhere else, and you come back like, oh no, it was there. And you go all the way back. So you just wasted like, you know, 10 to 20 minutes of your time. So this feature basically handles that in that you have to have the wherewithal to know that you've hit a dead end in this particular map. And at that point, you should definitely hit the button to make a memory scan or whatever of the area.
Yeah, I don't just want this in Metroidvanias. I want this in every game so that I could annotate whatever map, like my in-game map. I want to be able to annotate it with screenshots so that when I open up my in-game map in all of my games, I can then look at this like little pin. And I can click on that pin, and it can bring up a screenshot, and I'd be like, why did I put this marker on my map? I cannot tell you how many times that I've put a marker on a map, and then I've been playing, and I'm like, I wonder what that marker is. I can't remember what I did it for. So then I spend all the time going back out to that place, and I get there, and I'm like, well, I hit the button by accident. I don't know why I took this. So with the screenshot feature built in, I could bring up the map and say, oh, that's right. That's where that cave was. Right. I'm going to come back to that later. I think that would be really cool.
Yeah, it's a better bookmarking system than the current place a random icon on a map and you make your own Rolodex in your head of like, okay, the skull and crossbones means that there's a big enemy here. And the treasure chest means that there's some type of, you know, like you're like, okay, what icons do I have and what do those possibly mean in my head that I could possibly remember later on?
I ran into issues with Zelda.
Yeah.
Both of the ones on the Switch where I had in the moment I was like, well, this is what this means.
Yeah.
But then after I play for a while, I'm like, I can't remember.
Yeah.
It would just been better if we could have had labels or this really cool feature from Prince of Persia. Yeah. Speaking of Prince of Persia, we've got the minimum PC specs. And it doesn't look like it's requiring super powerful hardware. My one concern is that the resolution, it says the minimum resolution is 1080p.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but it's 60 FPS on the GTX 950.
Right, but a minimum resolution is 1080p.
Yeah.
Can you, like, does that mean that the game won't play if you're playing it on something with a lower resolution?
It would just
scale. Because I never paid attention to minimum resolutions before. It just scales, right?
Yeah, it would just scale. And no, you wouldn't have, typically, you're not going to have any type of worry, especially with a modern game. A lot of these handle them abstractly now. Like in the old, long ago, it would be like definite resolutions that the monitor had to support because you do like exclusive full screen stuff. But all of those are handled by a compositor of some sort now on Windows and on Linux, especially SteamOS. You're going to be going through GameScope. So it doesn't matter. GameScope will just say, hey, my monitor is 1080p. And then it'll just filter that down to 800p. It doesn't care. So from both of those things, the compositor handles that. So there's nothing to worry about. The good news is that I even heard that Switch runs at 60 FPS. So this game is very, very optimized. And
it's a good looking game, too.
Yeah, it's stylized, looks great. And they designed it for a low power system so that it scales well everywhere. And I think that this is just, I mean, Ubisoft, especially the people that I think the team that did Rayman Legends did this, and those guys are just those guys bang on all cylinders over there. So, like, I don't know, they do good work. Ubisoft themselves, they're the teams that they have. When you take a look at the engines of what they do, just abstractly, Assassin's Creed. Assassin's Creed, effectively, the first game was a tech demo. It was some guy gracefully moving through a crowd of people so that the animation system looked great and like how he was,
right.
You know, like that was just a glorified tech demo. But it goes to show like what Ubisoft does well is that they can do things in game engines that are compelling. And Rayman Legends was that the very elaborate 2D engine where you had like a zillion parallax layers and making Rayman Legends just look unreal great. So yeah, I mean, those guys do great work, and yeah, I'm excited for that game. I'm excited for it, but I am most likely going to wait for it to either appear on Game Pass or there's a heavily discounted price for it, because the starting price for it, I'm not going to pay, and there's other games that I have to play.
Yeah, that's fair. One thing, like, you know, you're talking about the graphics and the engines and stuff, and this game looks really good.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it also runs on low power devices, and that's because they went with a more stylized art style. And it allows them to not try and chase realism and instead focus on making things look nice without taxing systems too much. Like, you look at the next gen AAA games, they never do that. They always try and make everything push the limits, you know, 4K resolution. You know, they focused so much on visual quality instead of how can, you know, what kind of frame rate can this game maintain? And I feel like that's almost always a mistake. We look at the Xbox Series X, the PS5, and far too often games come out and like Redfall, for example, 30 frames per second. It's a shooter. I'm not saying you can't have fun with a shooter at 30 frames per second. I'm saying just make the game not be as pretty and run it at a higher frame rate.
Yeah.
And I feel like too many of these companies that make these big games lose sight of the fact that we would prefer to have a more performant experience than one that is more realistic looking. Maybe I'm projecting my feelings onto everybody else, though. How do you feel about that?
No, I mean, I think this is a big discussion as it is, especially when we think about it from low power devices that we all focus on. And how we look at things, especially like when I was trying to convey like how 40 FPS was like a megaton update that was coming, because we had experiences before any of the Steam Deck came out, like just going 40 FPS was like a fantastic place to be in. You look at the progression of like consoles and where 60 FPS was kind of the norm and only with the PS3 and Xbox 360 generation did things start really taking a turn for only running at 30 FPS. And it was like this seismic shift of, you know, even PS2 games, there's a lot of PS2 games that ran at 60 FPS, a lot of them, and they played well and looked good. There's a lot of PS2 games that still look good today, but sometime during that generation, that shift, it really impacted like how game design was, and 30 FPS became an okay number to target most of the time instead of some of the time. And I think we kind of in that same thing. And then when the new generation of consoles came out, they were like, oh, 120 FPS. And everyone's like, yeah, finally. And we're finally back to the swing of 30 FPS games on launch. And, you know, things just being too taxing just because, you know, they're hitting 4K and they want to look nice. Yeah, we're, you know, it's funny. We talk about this whole thing and all of this optimization stuff that a lot of teams don't have the time to do. And now you look at solutions like FSR3 and DLSS3, where we're creating, interpolating frames between frames and using like other techniques to hide latency and other stuff so that you can have it look smoother. It's just a weird thing to me. Now, obviously, the part here that's the funny crux of it is that games at 30 FPS suffer more when you go from 30 FPS to 60 FPS, that doubling feels awful. But going to 60 FPS to 120 FPS doesn't feel as bad. So we're back in the range where I think that, you know, targeting 60 FPS is a good target, and I think something that hopefully teams align on. But we're still in a bad spot overall when you take a look at Vulkan and DX12 in terms of PSOs, pipeline shader objects, and how developers need to do it instead of like a DirectX 11 or previous times when that was on the driver side. So, you know, you talk about stutter, game stutter, right? That's been this big PC problem. There's multiple problems that we need to collectively still get across a hurdle of. So I don't know. I mean, it's probably a combination of a lot of different things where things in the old days were all hardware fixed function stuff. And once we went to GPUs that were programmable, once they went GPU and you can have shaders and all this other stuff, that's when things took a nosedive. And I think we're still in the mix of that and trying to get out of the weeds of that and fix that whole situation. There's a lot to unpack there. I think ultimately you're correct where people that say, let's make a high performing game and we'll just focus on an art style and work that out is a better approach, but I don't know that every team can afford that.
Well, I think that a lot of teams just prioritize the wrong things. Yeah. In my opinion, what I would like to see prioritize gameplay, then frame rate, and then finally resolution.
Yeah.
But they always do it the other way.
Yep.
They always seem to be prioritizing the resolution and then the frame rate. And then the gameplay comes dead last almost. And that's frustrating.
Yeah. I mean, this could just be like coming full circle on the same idea that we had with handhelds where people are looking at it wrong. They're looking at it big number better. And that's, it's maybe just the symptom of that.
It's possible. The last thing that I want to talk about today is a game series that I feel like gets a lot of flack, and that's Final Fantasy 13. A lot of people did not like Final Fantasy 13, even though it got, I think there were two sequels, right? But that game, the tutorial for that game is 50 damn hours long. That's a problem. Okay. That's, I think, the problem with that game is you are essentially running down a corridor for 50 hours and then you get to the big open world. And the game opens up and gets really good, right? And Final Fantasy 13 has been listed on Square Enix's upcoming released schedule over at their press site. And, you know, somebody on Reddit screenshotted it in case they took it down. But I just opened it up now, and it's still there. I'll put it on screen for the people who are watching over on the YouTube channel. But it says right here, Final Fantasy 13 series coming to PC, possibly a remaster. I would love to see a remaster of this game because I played it on my 360 and my 360 died and I never got to finish that game. Now, my one gripe is that the tutorial is 50 hours long. So starting over is a big commitment. You know what I mean?
Sure.
So for a remaster, I don't know that they can streamline the beginning of the game very well to make it so that it doesn't take you quite so long to get to that open world stuff. But I would love to see this series remastered for, you know, for modern times because I loved the combat in that game. Did you ever play that one, Kerry?
I haven't played any Final Fantasy after 7.
None. Okay. So it had a really cool battle mechanic where you had like three people in your party and the other two people in your party would just kind of do their own thing, but you could program them ahead of time to, okay, if I get to this point, make sure that you heal me. Very much like an evolution of what they did in Final Fantasy XII, where you had these almost... like it became a game mechanic where you went out into the world and got, I forget what they're called, but it was basically like a program to put on your party to say, heal me if I get to this point. So basically what you would do in Final Fantasy 13 is you're controlling your party and you have a set of moves that each person in your party is going to do, but you have like multiple sets of moves. And so they're doing set A, you know, this guy's attacking with big poisons and stuff. This person's keeping the party alive. This person is doing physical damage. And then you could switch to mode B, where instead of doing poisons, you're attacking with direct damage spells instead of damage over time. You're not taking much damage right now. So the person who is healing is then trying to do something else. And then maybe you switch from physical attacks to range attacks. And you have like all these different options for just to say, this is the mode we're in, do that thing. And all of the characters in the party are doing that thing. But then you can change it based on what the situation is. And I loved those mechanics. Those were really, really fun, especially when you had different characters in your group, because that meant you had different abilities to build out. But a lot of people gave up on that game because the intro was bad. It was bad. It was bad, bad, bad. Square Enix did a bad job on that. But the open world was fun. So would you play it if it got a remake, or are you just, no, I'm done. I only want to play 7, and that's where my nostalgia is, and I don't care about the series anymore.
So you're asking someone that hates tutorials with a passion. Like I will drop a game if the tutorial section is overhanded. Like it's like you go up to something and it stops you, and it's just like bloop, 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 press A to jump, and I'm just like, oh. Like I will just stop playing a game if it does that. It's like rule number one for me. Any type of flavor of grinding in a game where I have to like grind a bunch just to get to like the next to handle the next boss, I won't do. And there needs to be, like, game design wise, if you're making an RPG, I can understand a little bit of grinding. Like, oh, I just need to like I need to level up. I'm just a little bit behind. Okay, let me level up once, and you spend 5-10 minutes to do that. But if you're like just hunting the same area looking for an item drop or something, that's a waste of time to me. I will just stop playing the game immediately. I do remember Penny Arcade, I think, making fun of this, where they're like, oh no, the game really opens up after 130 hours. And it's like, that was the joke. And I was like, oh my goodness. I feel like World of Warcraft, Final Fantasy VII, these games broke me in terms of what I'm willing to play. So World of Warcraft, I found like a perfect grinding schedule where I was like in one area where no one else was. I was the highest level warlock on the server, and I found this perfect thing. Like once I killed this mob, the next one would spawn, and I was like going through it, and I did like that 3 or 4 times, and I was like, what the hell am I doing? And I just canceled my subscription and I stopped playing World of Warcraft. It was like immediate for me. I was just like, I finally hit all the grinding that I would ever do in my life in that game. And Final Fantasy VII, I think, was doing that because I liked Final Fantasy VI so much that in Final Fantasy VII, I was in the open world and I was going around and I was like messing around with my materia. And I was like, what is this stuff? And it was just so much stuff. And I was just like, eh, I don't want to play this anymore. So I fell off Final Fantasy with VII. And I never really cared to look back at it. It's just like what I was looking for in games was like things that was just like, go have fun, explore, fail. Go. Let's say like Breath of the Wild. When Breath of the Wild came out, it was like, oh, this is amazing. This is so good. It's like, you know what to do. Just go there. And it had pop-ups every now and again. But then you'd see videos of like, oh, you can surf on your shield. And it gave you no tooltip about that. People just figured that out. And it's like those moments I enjoy far more than being told explicitly what to do and slowing the game up and breaking it up. So no, I will never play that unless they have a skip tutorial button and just jump you straight to the open world, which would be a funny bullet point to put on the game. But generally speaking, like, you know, the 90s marketing of this game has over 150 hours of gameplay.
That's bad stuff.
Yeah, that's a bad marker for me where I'm like, man, that is probably a ton of filler. Like I forget which Devil May Cry it was. I remember there's a Devil May Cry game I played where I went through and I beat a boss and then I had to run all the way back. And I was like, what was the point of that? Was that just to like occupy more of my time? And that's when I became a big advocate of 6-hour to 8-hour games that have no filler. Just let me play through a game and beat it, show me everything there is without wasting my time. Because if you're going to waste my time and say that's a bonus, that's not a selling point for me.
Yeah, I feel like and Square is particularly notorious for this kind of thing. Like I'm trying to play through Final Fantasy VII Remake, and the game as I'm playing, because the new one comes out in a couple weeks, right? And like I'm Cloud and Aerith are running through and doing stuff, and I've got like all these little quests to do, and that's fine. But like every time I come up to like they build in these weird narrow passages, where in order to get through, Cloud has to turn sideways and walk really, really slow.
Yeah.
And that doesn't, there's no good reason for that. I understand that they're trying to make this world seem like, I don't know what word I'm trying to think of, but you guys all know exactly what I mean. But all that does is really just slow things down for me, and it makes me lose interest very, very quickly. And that's too bad, because again, that's a game where I really like the combat. I think that the combat in Final Fantasy VII Remake is incredibly fun. I like it more than the combat in Final Fantasy 16. I like it more than the combat in Final Fantasy 15. I feel like VII Remake is like a really good balance between that real time and that the ATB system. It's really good, but then they waste your time where when I want to open a chest, I have to hold down triangle for 2 seconds. Just let me, I can understand, like, oh, right. don't delete a thing from your inventory by accident because you hold it down for two, like that's good.
Yeah.
But when it's open a chest or open a door, yeah, I have to hold it down to symbolize how hard he has to push. I'm just like, that's just wasting my time, so that you can say it has this many hours of gameplay. I don't have that many hours.
Yeah, that.
So don't do that to me.
That has been a weird game design trope that has like plagued every new game that's come out, is like hold the mm-hmm. button to do something. I don't know when that started exactly. I don't know what game like created that whole mentality.
I think we've talked about this before. Yeah.
Yeah, but like it's interesting. The as far as I'm aware, the sliding through thing is just a method to hide loading problems of loading assets. Like you don't want to have a loading screen in there. So you put this part in there where you're starting to throw away stuff that was behind you and start loading stuff that's in front of you. And it's just a loading screen. It's a fancy loading screen is basically what that comes down to,
I guess, but it looks the same. Like it looks the same on both sides of that. Like it's not like it's different textures or stuff. It looks the same.
Yeah. There's,
but so I don't know if that's necessarily what they're doing, but you're thinking more like the Mass Effect elevators.
Exactly right. Yeah. It's the Mass Effect elevator scene where you're looking at something going on and it's just masking a loading screen. Jedi Survivor does the crawl through stuff mm-hmm. as well. There's other games that just do this, and it's nothing more than masking loading screens. And I mean, for what it's worth, like I kind of wish that Starfield did that, where when you opened up the hatch, it was like a pre-baked thing that you saw that your guy was like going into and then closing it. And then that was the whole loading thing. I would appreciate that more than just pressing a button, seeing the door come slightly ajar and then going to a loading screen. But I'm sure people would be like, oh, I got to press it. I press this and it's like this super long thing that I have to wait for. I don't know if there's a
You have to watch it each time.
Yeah,
you like it'd be over and over. Like, okay, the guy, he puts his helmet on, he puts this little slatch down, or he hooks up the tube, and then he opens up the hatch and he climbs down the ladder, and you see that same thing after the 88th planet that you've been to. You're like, this again?
Yeah.
I would almost, at that case, I would almost say, put a loading bar on screen that actually means something, and I'll come back. Like, I'll just pick up my phone and look at my phone while I wait for the loading bar.
Yeah.
But you know what? It's we're complaining about things that are not that big a deal, I guess. But hey, let us know in the comments down below. Are you interested in Final Fantasy 13 coming as a remake? And what do you think about all the stories that we talked about today? Carrie, what's your next video that's coming out, man?
I'm trying to finish up my Ioneo slide video, and I've been, it's taking longer than usual only because I finally started doing the work to animate my graphs. Because this has been a
long time. I saw that tweet. Yeah. The graphs look fantastic.
It's been a long time coming. It requires a bunch of work because I need to, sanitize the data before I'm shoving it in. I originally tried to just do it like wholesale, like a raw, capture, And I was like, just put it in here and ignore all this other stuff. And it was breaking all over the place, taking values from other stuff. And I was like, all right, I have to sanitize this first before I start putting it through the mill. So it was just steps that I had to do that. Unfortunately, that's the way I had to do it because the only way that I'm capable to actually complete it. So that's what I'm doing. It's taking longer than usual only because this is going to pay off in the future, because in the future, I'll just be able to press double click some buttons and it'll just spit these out.
Right.
So that's my next video. So I'm going to be doing my review video on the INEO slide.
Awesome. Before we get out of here, I just wanted to say real quick a thank you to our patrons, which I never remember to thank. Like, so what was that sound?
My phone.
Was that me or you?
My phone.
Oh, okay. Just because I have my phone open at the same time. So I was very confused. So we've got a bunch of new patrons. We got Timothy, Jeff, Daniel, Charlie, Tim, another Timmy, Shower Thoughts, and Christian, Pat, and Ninjixel, and Scott. Those are our patrons right now. If you want to become a patron and support the show, before we started recording this episode, we all talked about the games that we had been playing this week. So if that's interesting to you, then click on the Patreon link down below. And thank you guys for hanging out with us and spending time with us. You could have been anywhere, but you decided to be here with us. This is a pre-recorded show instead of a live show, just because it's going to be like that for this whole month, probably, just because I got a lot of stuff going on during the weekdays. But thanks for hanging out with us, and make sure that you check out Carrie's channel. That is youtube.com/thefox, and I am youtube.com/nerdnest, and we will see you all next time. Stay rad, everybody.
Bye-bye.